Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's
world service.
Remember, it's a very short life, though, isn't it, the footballers? I mean, I remember Ralph Brown saying to me when I was in the sort of
it was kind of at the end of their playing lives, footballers were taken out and shot.
Yes, and this is where we... This is perfectly true. A lot of people do think this, but this is where we have to educate ourselves.
But there is a life outside of football.
The player's chair on a Monday? Well, this is different. It's Richie here. I am joined by Ken. Ken, how are you doing?
Very well, Richie. How are you?
I'm marvellous. We have a very interesting guest on this afternoon's podcast. Your thoughts on Danny Rose?
Well, we thought, you know, Richie's got an interview with Danny Rose. We should probably move aside the usual stuff, put this open to all. I think Danny Rose has been one of the most interesting players, I guess, over the last few years in the Premier League in terms of some of the stuff that he's had to say about football. He's been one of the most critical voices, I guess, on football. One of the... people who's been most sort of ready to talk fairly openly about his own disillusionment with aspects of the game. I mean, I think he's gone so far before to say, you know, I can't wait to be finished with this game. I've got a few years left in it and then I'm out. That's it. I'm done, because I'm sort of disgusted by a lot of what I see. You know, he's which not a lot of players, not a lot of people, I guess, in any industry tend to do, to sort of criticize very frontally the industry. I mean, I think he's had problems with his club before when they haven't liked that he's, you know, gone on the record at interviews and stuff, and Tottenham have disciplined him and so on. It's not like he's some kind of some kind of wild man, you know, just screaming controversial things into every microphone that's sort of thrust in his face. It's just that, you know, he's been willing to sort of talk about the ugly side of football in a way that very few people have. So I was certainly delighted, Richie, when I heard that he had agreed to occupy the player's chair.
Yeah, which is maybe why we've given him the slot of a Monday show. And since we are broadcasting outside of the Second Captain's World Service, of course, I'd like to welcome all you non-members. And the plan here is that you get a sense of the Player's Chair podcast and you rush immediately over to secondcaptains.com and you sign up and become a member yourself for just a fiver a month. You'll get access to a load of things, including the 30 previous episodes of The Player's Chair, from the most recent ones with Andy Cole, with Luke Chadwick, all the way back to the first one we ever did with Sean Dyche. This is the start of the month, so you get the most value for your money if you act now. So just get your arses over to secondcaptains.com and click join. It'll all kick off with tomorrow's football show with Ken Owen and Murph. Ken, while I have you, is there anything particularly striking about the weekend's football action that just can't sit until tomorrow? Now's your chance.
Well, I mean, I think it can mostly sit till tomorrow, Richie. Although it was a remarkable day for David Luiz. I don't know if you saw him carrying.
I wondered if you'd mention him
carrying the Arsenal manager Mikel Arteta. Arteta had leapt into his arms like a small child whose father has just walked through the arrival doors at the airport. Mikel Arteta runs to leap into the brawny arms of David Luiz and wrap his legs around the thickly muscled torso of that great Brazilian centre half, who had shepherded Arsenal over the line to win their, what was it, the 14th FA Cup? I mean, it's ridiculous.
14th.
Four in seven seasons. Their fourth FA Cup in the last seven. And I think to continue a personal run, Richie, of winning a major trophy every year since 2014, I think it is. Is 2014 the only year David Luiz hasn't won a major trophy since 2009? You know, I think it bloody well is. I think it bloody well is, Richie. Trophyless.
Does he get enough credit, Ken? Can I ask you that? Does he get enough credit?
David Luiz? He's not in. Luckily, he's not in the game for the credit. He's in the game for the medals. And he's in the game to survive. I think, as he said, football is about survival. Frank Lampard has finished the season trophyless. And I guess we can evaluate. He hasn't finished the season. Sorry. I've said he's finished the season trophyless. Chelsea are, in fact, still involved in the Champions League, although 3-0 down to Bayern and missing two of their best players, and Azpilicueta and Pulisic mm-hmm. both got injured against Arsenal. You're not really giving them a prayer of getting through that. But we can sort of go into all that, I think, in a lot more detail tomorrow.
Right, well, let's get on with this interview. Danny Rose, of course, is an England international. He's just finished his brief loan spell with Newcastle United. He's got a year left on his Tottenham deal, but every day in the media there seems to be a link with a new club. I've been really keen to speak to Danny for a while now. He is, as Ken said already, one of the relatively small amount of big name athletes that give very frank, very interesting and really honest views when he speaks to the media. He certainly did that in the chat that you're about to hear. You're listening to The Player's Chair, and this is episode 31 with Danny Rose. Danny, you're very welcome to The Player's Chair. Thanks a million for joining us.
No, anytime.
We're chatting now at the end of the longest and certainly the strangest season ever in English football. Are you glad to see the back of it, or are you raring to go again as soon as possible for the new season?
Probably a bit of both, really. I don't wish the end to any season because it's a short career, and obviously you want to play as much as possible, but under the circumstances that we've had over the past 5 or 6 months, it's obviously been very difficult for non-footballers, let alone us who are lucky enough to be able to finish our job, finish our season. So obviously it's been very difficult mentally, throughout, when we had a break for 2 or 3 months, and yeah, it's just been a very different experience, and it's probably one that we all hope we don't experience again, but it's still been an experience nonetheless.
Yeah, there was a spell where not returning and not being able to complete the season, it was a real possibility. And I remember you were one of the few players that spoke publicly about your concerns. And I remember everything you said at the time was completely understandable. You were basically just raising the question as to whether or not it was, like, it made sense to potentially risk your own health for basically the entertainment of other people. When you said that at the time, what reaction did you get privately? Did you have teammates agreeing with you? Clubs telling you to shut up? Like, how did that go down?
Because I'm not on social media or anything, so I obviously it's difficult for me to get a feel for a reaction publicly. But the people who did have something to say, obviously players that I've played with and against, and the people that are close to me, people's opinions that I do value. Mm. There was very much on my side with what I thought, and you see now I read with something with Ronnie O'Sullivan, the snooker player, that he sort of echoed the same thing as I did a few months ago.
Because Steve Bruce, your Newcastle manager, he rang you the following day after those comments, didn't he? What advice did he have for you?
He called me, and he knew firsthand you know, what the Premier League were trying, and he just obviously laid that back to me and just reassured me that we're probably, I don't know, the safest people to be back at work, sort of thing, because we were able to be tested 2 times a week, and you know, as long as you're professional and you respect the government's guidelines, what we're put in place, and the Premier League guidelines, then you know, we wouldn't be far wrong in what we was trying to achieve. And you know, we was back to training for 5, 6, 7 weeks, and I was lucky enough to be part of a football club where we had no negative test results, thankfully. So yeah, it was a great admiration for Newcastle as a football club for, you know, sticking to the guidelines and the rules that were set in place. And you know, we were one of, I don't know, few teams that managed to go the whole way through the second part of the season without any unfortunate test results.
When the games did start, Aston Villa Sheffield United was the first game, and one of the most memorable moments for me, or the most impactful at the time, was just before kickoff when all the players took a knee. I had never seen this before, and I wasn't expecting it at all. When did you first hear that that was something that might happen? When was it put to players?
I think, obviously, what people won't know or they might not know is that the captains of all Premier League teams came together, and they probably are still together, and on a WhatsApp group. So, you know, all ideas that each football club or each football captain had, you know, there was put together within that WhatsApp group between the captains. So, you know, any ideas that we had, we'd lay back to Jamal, the Newcastle captain, and you know, he'd put it into you know, the WhatsApp group with the other captains, and you know, that was the same with any other team. So, you know, I think we would have been told, I don't remember the exact day, but yeah, we would have been made aware, I'd say, you know, at least 2 or 3 days leading up to that first game, Sheffield United v Villa.
So it might have come from a suggestion of a player or a captain or somebody within the club.
I'm not saying our club, or but I think it would have maybe come from, yeah, a suggestion within that WhatsApp group. And yeah, as I said, it was a beautiful thing that had been suggested. And yeah, I just hope it is as powerful as it looks on TV. As it will be, in hopefully in I hope in years to come.
So how much? Because I know you've spoken publicly in a really interesting way on the issue of racism and football and football's response. How important do you think a campaign like that is likely to be in football? How much impact do you think it can make?
Look, I honestly have no idea. I have no idea. You literally just have to wait and see. You know, obviously there's never been such a devastating incident in what had happened in America with, you know, the guy George Floyd passing away, and so for me that's obviously one of the biggest things I've ever seen in the world, let alone in football. So. But all I can say is, you know, things have happened in the past, nowhere near to the extent of what had happened in America. And, you know, after a month or two, you know, it's just business as normal. So I hope that this is something now that will, catch everybody's eyes and ears and the mind. And yeah, all we can do now is just wait and see, and just hope that, yeah, nothing obviously like that happens again, and there is equality everywhere in football and obviously the world.
You spoke a lot last year after England's away game against Montenegro. Most people will remember that because of the racial abuse that was aimed at you and some other England players during the game and at the end of the game. Often when I interview people on this podcast, I try to see what kind of shared experiences we both have, and just to maybe compare how we both reacted. I've nothing comparable to what it's like to be in your shoes that night on that match. Now, I know that wasn't the first experience in football of you receiving racist abuse, but is it possible to put into words what that experience is like?
To me now, it's just it's just laughable now. Like, my attitude and you know, my attitude towards it is happening again, and yeah, I just have to get on with it because yeah, somebody's going to get a laughable fine, and then again, it's business as usual next week. But you know, it's not just football. You know, I got stopped by the police last week, and which is a regular occurrence whenever I go back to Doncaster, where I'm from, and each time is this car stolen? Where did you get this car? What are you doing here? Can you prove that you bought this car? And do you know, like, for me, that's been happening since I was 18, since I was driving. And you know, each time it happens, I just laugh, and because I know what's coming, and it's just how it is. Whenever I go on the train, you know, one of the last times I got on the train, you know, I got on there with my bags, and you know, this straight away the attendant says, "Do you know this is first class?" And I say, "Yeah, so what?" And they'll say, "Oh, well, let me see your ticket then." So I showed them the lady my ticket, and this is no word of a lie. The two white people walked on the train right after me, and she said nothing. And I said, "Well, are you not going to ask for their tickets?" And she said, "Oh, well, no, I don't need to." So, you know, people might think that's, you know, it happens or whatever, but to me, that's racism. And but these are the sort of things I have to put up with, you know, being stopped all the time, and yeah, being asked if I know this is first class and show me a ticket and things like that. This is everyday life for me, so. You know, but I feel embarrassed to even complain in a way or bring these up when you see the incident in America where, you know, a black man lost his life at the life of, you know, people are supposed to protect and serve. So, you know, whenever I do say things or complain about things, it's you sort of, you do hear that people say, well, you're on this money, so just get on with it. And, you know, I just give up with, you know, hoping things will change or whatnot, because that's some people's mentality towards racism. So for me, yeah, as it happens on a football pitch, but that first happened to me and my good friend Fabian Delph when we was playing for Leeds United at the time, and we was only 14 at the time, and he had been called the Black Bee on the pitch. And so yeah, since we're 15, that's what I know, and I'm not saying I'm used to it because it still hurts and whatnot, but how I then go on about my day after that is just, yeah, it's happened, and now I move on. And yeah, who do we play next?
You make it sound, and maybe this is your experience, that it's just so common in your life. It's something you will experience. You've experienced so many times that you now expect this to be just a part of your daily life.
Yeah, 100%. Particularly when I go home to Doncaster. You know, I don't like to drive, so usually I get the train. But whenever I do drive, I kid you not, I will get stopped at some point while I'm in Doncaster and pulled over and questioned. And yeah, And, you know, my friends have been there with me a lot of the time. And the last time, last week, this happened, I'd just left my mum's house. And I was pulled up in a car park. So the engine was off. I'd pulled up in a car park. And the police pulled in and they brought a riot van, 3 police cars.
Wow.
And, they questioned me, saying we've had a report that a car was not driving correctly. So I'm like, okay, so why does that make it my car? And, you know, they've got my ID out, they breathalyzed me. And, yeah, it's just, honestly, it's just one of them things to me now. And what can I do? What I don't understand what I can do or who I can complain to or anymore, because as I said, this happened first when I was 15 and it's still happening and now I'm 30. So it's 15 years of this on and off the field happening and there's no change whatsoever. So I just don't want to be, you know, repeating the same words that I say and, you know, before, and then people ending up saying, oh, be quiet, he's always moaning and whatnot. But obviously you've asked me what my experiences are and those are all my experiences. And I'll be honest, that will not be the last of my experience.
And you're at the point from what you're saying is that you think that, like, you're only talking about it now because I asked you a direct question. You're almost kind of weary of even mentioning it because you think that the backlash is aimed at you rather than the other people who were clearly motivated by some kind of racism in how they acted towards you. That you're the bad guy for speaking out, or that people will say, listen, as you mentioned a moment ago, this fella's on a load of money, just shut up and get on with it.
Yeah, well, whenever I have said things in the past, obviously non-race related, or, you know, just general things that I've spoke about in the past and or that I've questioned or I've said I'm not happy with this and that, you know, you do sort of hear some people's general response is, well, you're earning this much money, so just get on with it. And as I said, I'm very thankful that I'm not on social media, but yeah, I do hear about some people's comments, and that's why now, unless somebody asks me a direct question, I'm very in two minds now. You know, if I do really want to say my truth and the truth, because you have to understand it's not what everybody wants to hear at times. So that's the world we're in, and just get on with it.
So going back to that night in Montenegro, is that very much your thought pattern on the night? It's just, I've been here before, I've seen this before, I know what the outcome's going to be, just get on with it.
Yeah, so it happened within the first, 15, 20 minutes, and I've heard it. And I've just got on with the game. I went in at halftime. I didn't tell anybody. I didn't tell the manager. He wasn't aware. I didn't tell any staff, they weren't aware. And then obviously in the second half, I was playing on the manager's side down the left. And, you know, that's when he had heard it. And, he was devastated, to be fair. I've never seen a look on somebody's face like that for an incident that's not happened to them. And, you know, he was generally gutted, and he said it's the first time he'd been in that situation. So he didn't really know how to, how to interact with me after that. Because obviously after the game, I was very angry. But, you know, as he said, it's the first time he's been in a situation like that. So he was wary that he was a white male from, I don't know if he's from a privileged background, but he doesn't have, the background of what I have. And so it was a new experience for him. And obviously nobody's happy that it happened. But I think now he's equipped maybe a little bit better than he was in Montenegro for when or if and when that situation arises again, and he'll and he has zero tolerance for anything like that.
So does an action like walking off, does that get mentioned? Is that something that you would consider?
So
because if you've like a kind of...
I know that the players played Bulgaria away, and I was suspended that one, so I didn't go. But I was aware that that may have been an option that night when they was there. But my personal opinion on that, I really don't know how I feel about that, because there has to be some clarity on that, because okay, it happens within the first 5 minutes, you walk off, game gets abandoned or something, and then what? Do you have to play the game again? Or like, so there's no good walking off 5 minutes if then you have to come back next week to play the game again and it happens again. So I think there needs to be a little bit of clarity if players wanted to do that and what would be the next steps. But for me, I really don't know if that's the answer. You know, all I can say is luckily it happened to me and my team was winning. On the other hand, if my team wasn't winning and that was happening, you know, I may have reacted very differently. So it's just, it's a hard question to answer, but all I can say is one night I did my job and I made sure my team was victorious on the night. But on a different night, I will admit that it could go totally different. And yeah, so you know, I guess that we may need some clarity on that one. If teams or players wish to walk off, then what is then the next step? And sometimes, should it be on the players to make that call? Mm. You know, the referee is there ultimately to make sure everybody's safe on the pitch and they feel safe. So sometimes it may need to come from, you know, a referee or something sometimes. So, you know, everyone says, you know, the players should do this, players should do that, but ultimately, the ref is there to make sure 22 players are safe and sound as possible. And if you're being racially abused, I'd like to say you're not going to be in the right frame of mind. So maybe it could be up to an official to make that decision. But again, these are all conversations that may need to be had. And we just have to wait and see what the fallout is.
You mentioned a moment ago that there's laughable fines often follow these incidents, and I know you have the view of the punishment that the Montenegro FA got, which was a 20 grand fine, and they had to play one game behind closed doors. I know I've read your comments on that. But after that, you said that there was... You couldn't wait to see the back of football, to be honest, because there was so much politics and whatever in football. Like, did you mean that?
Yeah. I did mean that, because that's true. You know, fans and non-playing football people may just think it's turn up Monday to Friday, train for 2 hours and go home, and then you get the biggest reward ever on a Saturday, and that's being able to play. But it's not. It's football's not as hunky dory as that, and as people may seem. So I'm only speaking about my experiences and how I feel. And yeah, I stand by what I said 100%. And if nobody can see what I'm talking about, then you've just stated there, Montenegro got fined 20,000. So imagine a country being fined 20,000. That's not going to hurt anybody's pockets within that country. and you know that. So, and then I heard that in the Bulgaria game there was a 3 strikes and you're out. I think that the referee would stop the game once to tell the ref to tell, I don't know, the fans or the home team that, you know, you need to settle your fans down. And he has the second time to do that. And then if he has to do it a third time, then the game's off. But if I went to the shop now and robbed the shop, I don't get 2 chances to...
You don't get 3 goes of going in and out of the shop. Yeah,
going in and out and trying to steal something. So it's just, I find it a bit strange how you can have 3 chances to not only be racist but break the law. By the way, it's not just being racist, it's breaking the law. So I don't understand why somebody would why would you want your son to be a part of that? Or a nephew or someone you love, would you want them to be a part of that?
Absolutely not.
Okay, well, there you go. That was my take on it and my view on it. So
all this energy and this publicity, and it's a big show of unity behind the Black Lives Matter by the Premier League, and all the players and the coaches and the officials are all taking a knee. Are you optimistic? I'm not sure you are, based on what you've said. Are you optimistic that there will be any change?
No, not really. As I said before, I just have to wait and see. You know, there's so much more that needs to be done. I've played Sunderland, Tottenham, Newcastle, Bristol City, Peterborough, Watford, and Leeds United. And I dare say to you that I don't remember seeing a black person working upstairs in these football clubs. Mm-hmm. And again, that's one of the things I'm talking about that needs to change, that there has to be a change. And going away from that, you just need to look at the amount of, you know, black managers that are in football now. And you look back to the greats when I was growing up, the Andy Coles and you know, people like that, Sol Campbell, who, you know, obviously Sol Campbell's in management now, but he's had to start at the very bottom. And if you look at his CV, his CV is as good as anybody's. And so it's just things like that, with the number of black coaches that are at the forefront on a Saturday on the touchline. There's not many. And you know, again, that needs to change. But you know, there's so much things that do need to change. And I respect and understand it will not change overnight, but I just hope people are aware of what I'm saying, and they don't think that I'm just moaning again. But what I'm saying is near enough facts. So I just hope there can be a change in the future.
Do you think there's an appetite for change among the right people?
I honestly have no idea. Mm-hmm. No idea. You know, obviously before the incident with George Floyd in America, one day a year we wear "Kick It Out of Racism" T-shirts. One day a year, and then people look like they may be doing the part, whatnot. But one day a year, we wear a T-shirt saying "Kick It Out of Racism." And then that's it till the next season. Like, it's not really...
I think that's tokenism.
Yeah, basically.
basically. And doing that one day a year or doing something one day a year is not really going to get the message home. So all I can say is we just have to just wait and see now what happens. It's just a crying shame that a man has had to lose his life in the way he did. For this movement having to happen. So, yeah, it's just very sad, really.
You mentioned Andy Cole there. Les Ferdinand, I read something he said recently about you. He said, he actually compared you to Andy Cole. He said, I don't know if you're aware of the quote. I think he said it on TalkSport. He said, sometimes the Spurs coaches weren't sure how to read you or to understand you. And he used the phrase, he's a closed book, an introverted type of character. And when I read that, I was thinking, God, I've read quite a few of Danny's interviews at this stage, and I wouldn't describe him as a closed book. Do you agree with that assessment?
No, I do agree with what he said, because, I do appreciate that previous managers or coaching staff at Tottenham may have felt like that, because, I am like that. But if I'm asked a question or I don't agree with something, then, you know, I can be quite vocal. And
He said that too, in fairness. He said, when you've got something to say, he says it.
Yeah, I'll say it. But, and to me, I find it strange that people... I don't know if they're quite fascinated, or they're like, oh my God, I can't believe he's just said that. Like, I find that very strange, because I'm just answering your question. So why is that a shock to you? And yeah,
but you know,
how I am, and my mum and my uncles will tell you from a young age, that's how I've always been. You bet, yeah, my school teachers will tell you that.
Really?
But it's just how I am, and I don't mean to offend anybody, or I don't say things to have a negative aura around myself, because that's not going to benefit me in any way, shape or form. But, yeah, if you ask me a question, then, yeah, I'll answer. I'm not going to do the whole... Yeah, I'm happy to play. Yeah. I'm happy to win 3 points. Sort of cliche speech that, you know, some players give, because when I finish football, I want to know that I gave everything on the pitch. Which so far, as a 30-year-old, I feel as if I'm ticking that box towards the end of my career. And also, I want to know that I finished this game knowing that I was myself. So. I'd rather, you know, be myself, and okay, you dislike me or not like what I have to say, but at the end of the day, I get more gratitude and satisfaction and happiness in knowing that I've been myself, and I gave 110% for you on the football pitch, and that is all I'm bothered about.
You're right, like the majority of players do just adopt for the most bland, boring interviews and statements, like as much as possible, and you do make for it's a really interesting interview anytime you speak. But I'm just wondering, from your point of view, have you ever done an interview where you go, geez, I said too much there, I should have rolled that back a little bit? Because it's like, I totally get that there's being frank and open and honest and saying your piece is a really valuable, worthwhile trait to have. But in the world you're in and the industry you're in, sometimes that can come with consequences.
I'm 30 years old. I'm a grown man. So as long as I'm not effing in this and effing in that and calling somebody, you know, this and that, then no, I don't regret saying things. Sometimes timing may be questionable, but really? What I've said in the media, you know, about racism, about not being enough black coaches within football. I don't understand how I can apologise or think that, oh, I've said too much here. That wouldn't sit well with me. No.
I'm actually thinking of a specific example. It's nothing whatsoever to do with your views on racism or the culture of racism within football or outside football. The specific interview actually you did with The Sun at the end of 2017, and you just were asked views on, you know, how Spurs are doing, what they need to do in the transfer market. You were asked about your personal ambitions, and I've read the interview a couple of times. There isn't one comment there which I'd read and think, okay, that's wrong, that's incorrect.
Okay, what was that?
It was just, I think you were asked for your views on, I think you said you wanted to play up north again at a club. You were urging Tottenham to make signings that were really kind of statement signings. I think the phrase you used was not players that you have to Google. Really frank, open, honest, interesting stuff. But also it was reported soon after that the club fined you 2 weeks. That's what I meant when I think, like, 2 weeks' wages for you, like, that's an expensive conversation.
It is. Yeah, it was an expensive conversation. But what I'm supposed to regret, what we speak about in the changing room, or what a majority of fans are really thinking, no, I'm not going to regret or think, oh, I shouldn't have said that at the time, because that is what the changing room was saying. That is what majority of fans were saying. And, you know, I said it, and now I don't, maybe the timing, as I said, sometimes when I've said stuff, the timing may have been incorrect. And at that time, I'll definitely hold my hands up, the timing may have been incorrect, because I think it was literally the leading up to our first game of the season. So that was an unnecessary distraction for the lads, the club. I fully take that on board. But no, what I said, and, you know, I got punished for it, and we move on.
God, I'd be licking my wounds a lot longer if I was to find that amount of money. Anyway, me and you are very different. Can I just ask you before we finish up, where are you now? I know you're 30 years old. You have a year left to go in your deal at Tottenham. You're in the back of a loan spell, which went very well at Newcastle United. Your situation is quite public. You've said in the past that Daniel Levy has said to you that there isn't a deal there after this one at Tottenham. And
yeah,
there's nothing from you that suggests you want to stay. What will happen now?
Yeah, I'm very happy to stay at Tottenham and see my last 10-11 months out. I'd love to. There's nothing I want more than to play one more time in front of the fans. Obviously, my last game for Spurs was a 1-0 defeat to Liverpool, and at the time, I didn't know that may have been or could be my last game for Spurs. So I would want nothing more than to play in front of the Tottenham fans one more time, and just to cherish, you know, all the moments that I've had over the years with them. So for me, look, honestly, I want nothing more than to have one more game in front of the Tottenham fans, nothing more. And they've always been good to me. I possibly have gave them reasons over the past for them not to be so good to me, but they know that when it was game time, I gave everything for them. I gave it 100% for them, and I'll continue to do that for as long as I'm contracted to Tottenham. So for me, I can't stress it enough, and I'll say it again, I would love nothing more to play one last time for Tottenham, and, you know, just be able to say goodbye to them and thank them for everything that they've done for me as a person, as a player, and because ultimately, I as good as I am, or as good as I was because of the love that they gave me. And yeah, for me, I'm very relaxed. You know, it's obviously off season now before it all starts again in a few weeks. And I just have to wait and see. Mm. But for me, I'd love nothing more than to play for them fans once again.
Well, I wish you well with that, whether it's playing for Tottenham again or playing for Tottenham in front of fans or whatever happens beyond this season. It was really, really interesting having you. Thank you so much for joining us. Danny Rose, best of luck with everything. Cheers, mate.
All right. Cheers. Thank you. Yes!
Magnificent achievement in the history of Irish soccer. Ireland are there.
So I went to Ireland and I had a famous press conference where they wanted to know everyone in the world and had got the job except me. And got on with the job then. I had thoughts on international football, how we should play. Everybody played the same way in the world. I went to the World Cup in Mexico. They were like peas in a pod. They played through a playmaker. They all played a sweeper. They all played possession football, and nobody would commit anybody forward until the playmaker was in possession in a good area, and then they would commit themselves a little bit. And I thought, well, we can't enter this fray with the Irish team and play that way, because it'll take us years to catch up and produce a team with the quality that they had got, the type of game they played. So we introduced a game like we play the ball into the corners, condense the areas, put them under pressure, and play from there. And it worked a charm. It wasn't a knockabout, take your time game. It was a rush game, more of the sort of game that the Irish expected of their own Gaelic players. You get the ball forward, you compete, you chase people, you close people down, you create excitement, you win balls when you shouldn't win balls, you commit yourself to the game. A lot of the pundits didn't like it, but the teams that we played against hated it. They'd never experienced anything like we dictated to them. I mean, Ireland actually beat Brazil. Not many people know that, but we did. Okay, it was at Lansdowne Road and it was 1-0. But we beat Brazil, and we've beaten every team of any quality in the world.
Brady again. Yes!
Have I missed football? Yes, I have. I miss the involvement with the players because I'm not really a manager, I'm a coach. I miss it when I go to a football match because I've nothing to go to the football match for. Unless I'm supporting the club. I love the North East clubs. I'd like to see them do well. So I'm on their side. But I've nothing to look at and see. I've no player to watch. I've no analysis to do on the game. I've no notes to make. I've no preparation to do for a game that's coming up. I've no young lads to have a look at or try or to talk to or to try and bring through. But then I look at it and I'm 62. The team needed to be restructured and rebuilt. And when you've been there 10 years, that makes it that much harder. I'd done me bit. It was time for me to leave. And I suppose now, after 10 years, I'm as much Irish as I am English. I am now an Irish citizen, not an honorary. I'm an Irish citizen. I've got my passport. My wife's got a passport. I've got a house over there. I get back and forth whenever I can. I love the place to death.
Yes, we want. I promise to take Mick Rome. We're taking Mick Rome.
And listen, have you a preference again? We asked you before, Italy or Uruguay?
I'm not really bothered. We're there. We're in the last eight for the first time in my history, and it's magic. I'm delighted for the lads.
Well done. Congratulations. Cheers, thank Dave. You.
And good luck to the people back home.
Great.
Hope they have a good party.
Really interesting stuff there from Danny. Ken, do you think many people will have heard that interview and be thinking, this fella just needs to get over it, deal with it, keep quiet about it?
I don't think so. I mean, I hope not. Mm. You know, when he was talking about like the sort of awkwardness he feels in sort of, say when he's talking about that thing on the train, you know, and you can imagine somebody going, well, what are you complaining about? You're sitting in a first class train compartment, you know, things could be worse, you know, that sort of sense. But like, it's, you know, if he doesn't, you might sort of assume this sort of thing doesn't happen just because you're rich, you know what I mean? There might be that assumption. Mm. which isn't the case. If he doesn't talk about it, then how is anybody going to know?
It was what struck me was that his feeling of just how inevitable it was that he was going to be treated in this way and how pointless it was to speak out about it because it's just not going to change and that so many of the people that will hear his views will actually push back against him and tell him he's wrong to speak out. I thought that was a bit grim.
Yeah, well, the kind of weariness of it, like, you know, I mean, I suppose at least he's not on, as he said. He really did sound very grateful not to be on Twitter. Right?
Yes, mentioned that a couple of times.
I was kind of thinking that myself. You know, it seems to get worse every single day on there. So yeah, he is probably.
Yeah, I've pulled back almost completely from going on it. It's not for me at all anymore.
Yeah, yeah. So at least it's that. But you know, I think it's important for people in his position. I mean, I can understand on the one hand the kind of the weariness or like the pessimism that, you know, anything is going to change. But I suppose maybe things do change. You know, maybe it just doesn't seem that way. But I mean, if you sort of pull back, in the long term, things do change. Maybe it just seems like maybe it happens a bit too slowly for any of us individually. But over time, I guess it does happen. So that's why it is important to sort of keep trying, even if it doesn't look like it's going to happen.
It does give an idea of the extent of the issue throughout society, that it's more than just trying to modify fans' behaviour in stadiums. It's more than poster campaigns or putting logos on jerseys or kneeling before a game. It's touched on things like underrepresentation of black people in managerial roles or coaching roles or technical staff or in boardrooms, and or the attitudes that, like you said, linked to seeing a black person driving a car and thinking, we've got to stop this guy, or seeing a black person getting on a carriage thinking, this fella's in the wrong place. We'll leave it there for this one. I want to thank Danny massively for joining us. I've been speaking to him for a while now about coming on. I really, really appreciate him coming on and being so open and frank in the way that he was. And I hope now that, having heard that, you're all rushing over to secondcaptains.com to join up and become a member. It's only a fiver a month. It's a feckin' bargain. Leaves me now just to thank you, Ken. Cheers.
Thank you very much, Richie.
And thank you for listening.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.